Good afternoon and happy Friday. It's October 22nd and we are here to read the Waterloo Cedar Falls The Courier. I'm your reader, Bob Young. Let's take a quick look at the weather today. It's a chilly start to the day with morning lows generally in the 30s. Thankfully, the winds are much lighter than they were yesterday, so wind chills will be less of an issue. We look to our northwest this morning to see plenty of clouds rolling out of the Dakotas. That's all coming southeast and is associated with a weak system. No measurable precipitation is expected from the cloud layer, but a sprinkle is possible in spots this afternoon. Tonight, plan on more clearing, and we should see another frosty night. This weekend, Saturday is the pick day, with sunshine and highs into the 50s. Sunday looks wet, windy, and chilly as a strong system passes just to our south. This results in a widespread cold rainfall for eastern Iowa, and totals over an inch look quite possible in spots by the time it wraps up sometime Monday morning. Looking at the articles on the front page now, we have MapQuest, new Iowa maps would shift congresswomen into new districts. Council okays $14 million grant for new theme park. Missing woman found dead at ex's house. And let's begin reading. Waterloo's heart touts his vision for the future. Vision, leadership, and broadband discussed at Waterloo State of the City address. Stories filed by Amy Rivers and begins with a photograph of Waterloo Mayor Quentin Hart as he delivers the State of the City address. And he's standing at a podium. Waterloo. Less than 2 weeks out from the election, Mayor Quentin Hart talked about the importance of good leadership, touted his 2030 vision plan, and teased citywide broadband during his fifth State of the City address on Thursday. Hart's speech inside the still being renovated Waterloo Convention Center included video testimonials from city directors on the progress in their various departments. Quote, I am proud to report the state of our city is strong, and our best days are still to come, Hart told the socially distanced crowd inside the main exhibit hall. Quote, by reflecting on the accomplishments of the past year, we also affirm our pride-fueled drive to constantly improve our community and inspire the next generation of leaders, he added. The Waterloo 2030 Strategic Plan, recently adopted by the City Council, outlines 8 areas of emphasis for the next 8 years. They include marketing the city, improving housing, growing a diverse and skilled workforce, turning the Crossroads Center area into a sports and recreational-themed retail center, adding art and lighting projects to downtown, adding sports facilities to attract youth tournaments, and eliminating barriers to create, quote, an equitable and sustainable community for the future, unquote. Quote, it's our goal to be bold and ambitious, Hart said, asking those in attendance to fill out cards indicating their level of interest in the 8 priorities. Quote, the season of politics has too many feeling division is our only path forward. But this too shall pass, unquote. In a short video, Planning and Development Director Noel Anderson talked about new development over the past year. Hart noted last year was one of our highest permitting years, with $141.06 million in new valuation and 720 new jobs. Community Development Director Rudy Jones said, although it would be a stretch, we should be able to move toward that goal of rehabilitating 800 houses in 8 years, with additional resources. Waterloo Police Chief Joel Fitzgerald talked about the decline of crime in the city and the addition of embedded mental health personnel, while Leisure Services Director Paul Hudding noted the new skate park and Greenbelt Lake improvements. Hart was joined on stage for conversations with VGM CEO Mike Malero, Elevate Behavioral Health's Bob Lincoln, and Dream Iowa co-founder and activist Nilvia Rise Rodriguez about the 2030 vision. Quote, where people want to live, that's going to be the key in the next couple of years, Malero said. There's some great stuff to aspire to elevate the quality of life. All those things are going to help make this a better community. Toward the end of the address, a video stated the city was laying the foundation for universal fiber to connect public infrastructure like city buildings, the utility network, parks, and other city-owned spaces. After the event, Hart said the council will explore expanding that to residents and businesses in the future. But there isn't a specific timeline yet, and state and federal funding would be needed. Quote, we're still waiting to get back these preliminary numbers, but we do want to let the community know we've talked about this for 20 years, a couple of decades, Hart said. Now we're at the point where the design is almost finished, and we need to move as a community forward. Hart held his 2020 address virtually in September of last year due to the pandemic. The address had previously been given in the spring. Now let's look at an article filed by David Pitt. New Iowa maps would shift congresswomen into new districts. And we have pictures here of the new proposed district maps. The proposal from Iowan's nonpartisan legislative services agency would keep the Democratic counties of Johnson and Lynn in separate districts, unlike a previous plan rejected by Republicans this month. The proposal would move Miller Meeks into the 3rd District, now represented by Axne. That would leave the Southeast Iowa District, now represented by Miller Meeks, newly numbered District 1, with no incumbent living there. Henson of Marion would be in a slightly reshuffled and renumbered 2nd District. Under the new plan, each of Iowa's 4 congressional districts would have favored Republican Donald Trump in the 2020 election over Democrat Joe Biden. That's a switch from the first set of maps that created 2 districts with strong Republican majorities, one that favored Democrats, and one that was nearly equal. Trump won Iowa with 53.1% of the vote to 44.9% for Biden. The latest map would include 20 counties in District 1, 22 in District 2, 21 in District 3, and 36 counties in the sprawling 4th Congressional District. Each district would be close to the ideal population for congressional districts of 797,592. Fewer incumbent state legislators are paired in this plan, with 20 senators paired in the same district, compared with 24 in the first plan. In the House, 36 incumbents were drawn into the same districts, compared with 38 in the first plan. The Iowa legislature is scheduled to meet in special session next Thursday to consider the maps. The Iowa Senate on October 5th rejected the first set of redistricting maps on a party-line vote, with all 32 Republicans voting no, and the 18 Democrats voting yes. By state law, the Legislative Service Agency is responsible for following detailed guidelines to ensure population balance among Iowa's congressional districts and to prevent political influence in the initial drafting of changes. The legislature can only accept or reject the first and second set of maps without amendment. The agency noted in its second drawing of maps that the Senate's resolution rejecting the first plan and ordering LSA to submit a map that better balances compactness with population deviation would violate state law and the Iowa Constitution, which place a higher priority on population equality. If the second set of maps is rejected, the LSA will have 35 days to draw a third set, which could be amended by majority Republicans leading that process. The Iowa Supreme Court has given lawmakers until December 1st to approve the new maps. Democrats have expressed concern Republicans may amend the third set, as the law allows, to give the GOP a partisan benefit. It would be the first time lawmakers reworked maps themselves rather than taking an LSA plan. Amy Rivers filed this next story, and it begins with a great photograph of a bald eagle soaring above the construction site for the Lost Island theme park. Waterloo approves tax rebates. $14 million grant to Lost Worlds theme park. Waterloo. The city approved a grant of $14 million in tax rebates over the next 20 years to help develop Lost Worlds theme park over the objections of a few residents who bemoaned spending public money on a private development. The city council unanimously approved issuing up to $14.5 million in general obligation bonds, with the extra going toward paying the tax on the bond sale in order to help fund the acquisition, construction, and equipping of the 159-acre theme park. Under the development agreement approved by the council, Lost Worlds will get a 50% tax rebate for 20 years for any value over $510,350, and the city will reconstruct a segment of East Shawls Road adjacent to the park. In exchange, the city will receive 56 acres of property north of Lost Island Water Park and east of Hess Road, and developers will complete construction of the new theme park by the end of 2022. Mayoral candidate Sophia Mays said she believed the amusement park, quote, benefits one side of Waterloo, but does not benefit the other side, and she said she didn't support it because we don't have money for it, unquote. Quote, now we're being asked to put in more money, lots more money, agreed resident Dwayne Eilers. Where are we going to get this $14 million? Councillor Dave Boson said the Birch family, which owns Lost Island and is constructing Lost Worlds, is spending $96 million on the new theme park. He said more hotel stays will increase hotel-motel tax revenue for the city, in addition to the tax growth from new businesses that spring up around the park. Quote, there's a lot of pluses that the city's going to receive out of this, Boson said. Depending on the interest rate on the bonds, the city may need to pay back $1 million per year, said Noel Anderson, planning and development director. He estimated Lost Worlds will cover a fifth of that, paying between $180,000 and $200,000 per year in additional property taxes, even with the tax rebate schedule. The city may also change its hotel-motel tax ordinance to use around $200,000 from estimated increased tax revenue toward debt service, placing the theme park in the San Marnan Tax Increment Financing District, which generates about $7 to $8 million of increases about every five-year period, will also help repay the bonds, Anderson said, as will the land the city would be acquiring. Quote, that additional development will help us pay back the $14 million and to hopefully see the wave of additional investment in that area to follow the theme park, he said. Besides adding to the tax base, the theme park will provide a multiplier effect in terms of jobs and new businesses, not to mention quality of life, said Lisa Rivera Schubal, Vice President of Economic Development for Grow Cedar Valley. Other communities marvel and are a little bit jealous of Waterloo right now for having $100 million in capital investment being made, she said. It is what we need right now to attract and retain talent, unquote. Councillor Pat Morrissey said he fully supported the project. Quote, it's not just good for that area of town. It's good for all of Waterloo as far as known influx of tourists coming into our town and spending more money in our town, Morrissey said. That's exactly what the city of Waterloo wants, what we need, unquote. Jeff Reinitz filed this next story. Police confirm missing Dunkerton woman found dead in Charles City in apparent murder-suicide. Dunkerton. Authorities have confirmed that a body discovered at a Charles City home last week was that of a missing Dunkerton woman. Charles City Police said the body of Jennifer Jo Swingen, 44, also known as Jennifer Smith, was found at the Shaw Avenue home of her ex-husband. Her ex-husband, 46-year-old Shane Swingen, was also found at the home and was pronounced dead a short time later. Charles City Police said they are investigating the deaths as a homicide-suicide. Jennifer Swingen had been reported missing earlier this month by family members. On October 12th, Charles City Police were called to Shane Swingen's home to check on the welfare of a resident at about 3:30 p.m. An ambulance was called for a possible drug overdose, and Shane Swingen was transported to a nearby hospital where he died. Officers executed a search warrant on the home and discovered Jennifer Swingen's body inside. An autopsy by the Iowa State Medical Examiner's Office in Ankeny determined she died of strangulation, according to police. Court records show the two were married in July of 2018 in Dysart, and they lived in Dunkerton. Divorce papers were filed in December 2019, and the divorce was finalized by the end of the month. Shane Swingen moved to Charles City, and Jennifer Swingen remained in Dunkerton. Let's turn the page to the Cedar Valley section. Cedar Falls hires new human resources manager. Bailey Schindel takes over after predecessor quit in less than a year. Story is filed by Andy Malone. Cedar Falls. The city has hired an experienced professional to lead its human resources division, a fairly new sector of local government, in a city with a few hundred public employees. Bailey Schindel took the helm as human resources manager on September 27th, but went on maternity leave soon after commencing her tenure, the Courier has learned. Schindel is supervising two human resource specialists and making a salary of $82,000, according to city spokesperson Amanda Huseman. She previously served in a similar capacity for PPG Coatings Services in Waterloo. She brings more than 8 years of human resource experience to the position. The position was included in the fiscal year 2022 budget, approved by the City Council earlier this year. The decision of whom to hire was made by city staff. Council approval was not required. Quote, I am excited for the opportunity to share my human resources knowledge and support as a resource to our employees and the city, Schindel said in an email. Quote, I look forward to working with each department and continuing to grow and develop consistent HR services in the city to benefit our workers and the community they serve. The Human Resources Division is a sector of the Finance and Business Operations Department headed by Director Jennifer Rodenbeck. The two specialists and Rodenbeck are sharing the workload in Schindel's temporary absence. The Human Resources Division was established by the Council at the end of last year. Quote, we just felt that for an organization the size of the city of Cedar Falls, shouldn't we have a Human Resources Division? It was the right timing, Rodenbeck said at the time. Schindel's predecessor, Tony Babcock, resigned this summer after less than a year on the job. Officials said she found a position that better fit her needs. Babcock's social media pages indicate she stayed in town and took a job as an employee relations partner at Collins Aerospace, which has an office in Cedar Rapids. According to the Cedar Falls Human Resources Manager, description offered by Babcock on her LinkedIn page, it manages and oversees job classifications, compensation administration, performance management, benefit administration, employee and labor relations, leaves and accommodations, and recruiting and training systems. Quote, there have been no changes in the job classification since it was created, said Huseman. The human resources manager serves as a liaison to the Human Rights Commission, but Brenda Balvans, one of the city's human resource specialists, is continuing to serve in that capacity for the time being, according to officials. The Racial Equity Task Force recommends the city hire an internal staff position that could eliminate the responsibility of serving as a liaison to the commission, and council has expressed an interest in investigating that possibility. Andy Malone also filed this next story. Proposed Cedar Falls zoning ordinances survive alteration attempts. Four separate motions each fail in 4-3 votes. Cedar Falls. Four attempts were made by a pair of city councilors earlier this week to make changes in the proposed ordinances that overhauled downtown zoning. But not enough support was gathered on four separate motions, with each failing 4-3 votes at Monday's City Council meeting. Instead, the package of legislation passed in its second reading and will come before the Council as written for final reading and possible vote on November 1st. Councillors Daryl Cruz and Susan DeBoer recommended a flurry of changes significant enough to involve the Planning and Zoning Commission and delay the ordinance's adoption. During what turned into a heated session, the only support for the amendments came from Councillor David Sires. Motions were made to change the mandatory shared parking requirements for new commercial and residential units in the proposed language into voluntary ones. Another recommended the removal of a prohibition on vinyl siding for new downtown construction included in the proposed code. Issues with lower residential parking requirements have been voiced in the past, and a compromise on them was brought to the floor in hopes of finding middle ground. But the motion that attracted the most attention was a request to revive the Planning and Zoning Commission process for some downtown site plans, whereas in the proposed zoning language, it would be replaced with an administrative staff review. Some councillors felt it was a sign of a lack of transparency, but that was disputed by others like Councilman Simon Harding, who sided with the staff's depiction that the transparency is in the new zoning language being clearer and more objective. Quote, "The whole point of the ordinance is to put it in black and white," Harding said. Quote, "It says what you can do and what you can't do. It's way more strict than what we currently have. It gives you a yes or no. It will be good for developers in many ways to see what they can and can't do. If anything, it opens up the table to not play favorites and to not have it be politically biased." Issues with the proposed zoning package have been raised in writing by a group of upset downtown businesses and property owners and representatives, making up more than 70 addresses among them. One sent a letter to councillors with possible amendments, and a few have spoken at recent council meetings asking for a delay until a compromise is reached. Quote, "I'm not here to oppose the forum-based zoning. I'm here to oppose the parking requirements for the residential portion of the forum-based zoning as it relates to new construction," said Darren Beck. Quote, "You know, fundamentally, the forum-based zoning seems to be where Cedar Falls is headed. There are other cities that are doing very well with forum-based zoning. I've done a little bit of research, and I have not found any cities that have this small of a parking requirement. And most of the cities that I find that in don't have parking dilemma that we currently have for a lack of infrastructure." Mayor Rob Green has voiced his support for the new downtown zoning ordinances that have been in the works since 2019 and would replace what has been in place since the 1970s. The Planning and Zoning Commission approved the package of ordinances earlier this year. Next, students, school student teachers, UNI education majors learned valuable lessons from Charles City kids. Story filed by Amy Cook of the Globe Gazette. Charles City. The students became the teachers for future educators from University of Northern Iowa on Monday. Charles City School's Innovative Campus and Project RISE students shared their personal experiences and what they believe makes a good educator with UNI student teachers. This opportunity has been offered to UNI student teachers over the past 5 years, said UNI student teacher coordinator Katie Corbel. Innovative Campuses is a K-12 program that allows hybrid and alternative learning models for students. Innovative Campus Principal Larry Wolf said the programs offer a flexible learning experience that students have to apply and interview for. Quote, "In that interview, we lay it all out. What you have to do if you're behind credits, if you want to graduate early, if you're returning to have a job, all that gets messaged out to work. What's the best fit for you," said Wolf. Project Rise is a program that mentors and serves high school and middle school students. According to juvenile court school liaison Dan Caffrey, there are around 40 students in the program. The opportunity to learn from the students was organized by Corbel, who wanted to give her student teachers relevant examples of what teaching is like. Her goal is to show future teachers that achievement is measured by what students accomplish today compared with where they were. Quote, "My students come away, I think, a little bit more prepared on what they should possibly be dealing with in the classroom and thinking about why this child is acting out, sleeping in class, doesn't want to talk to me, or constantly having fights. It may not be because they're naughty kids. They're naughty because they can't open up to tell what's going on," said Corbel. During the morning session, around 20 student teachers split into three groups, listened to students' experiences about how they found a path to success. In one session, Carrie Lane, alternative high school students, shared what led them to apply for alternative learning and why it was the best fit for them. Don Betts, a teacher at the alternative school, led the conversation and shared his personal experiences. Betts told the student teachers about a former student who was in and out of school over the years. At 20 years old, the student came to Betts asking one more chance at a high school diploma. That student got to work and earned his diploma. Quote, "We're the house of the second chances. We're out here. When you come here, you need to be ready to learn," said Betts. Project Rise students shared with the student teachers challenging situations they had gone through that led to poor grades or behavior issues. Situations ranged from family illnesses to a parental figure not being in their life. Caffrey said he is proud his students can tell their stories. The fact that they're able to stand up and tell the things that they're telling and trying to make a difference when they're freshmen, sophomore, and juniors, that's a big step. I don't know if I would have been able to do that when I was in high school, said Caffrey. The students listed qualities they admire in teachers and how they can earn a student's trust. Kaylee Frandl, currently student teaching in kindergarten classroom, said the experience was eye-opening. Quote, "We see one side of the student, and now I'm hearing what they have to say. What's really actually going on is just crazy, because you don't see that necessarily. Not all students will open up to you, so it's good to hear their side," said Frandl. She said the experience will be useful in her own classroom in the future. Quote, "If there is like a problem, like an outburst or a tantrum, I'm just going to go directly, quote, what's going on? Because the behaviors have nothing really to do with you and nothing to do with pretty much what's going on. Most of the time, it's an underlying issue," said Frandl. Corbel said she hopes student teachers come away with a deeper understanding of the spectrum of student life experiences. Quote, "I really hope that they take away understanding that there's a reason for the behaviors of students, whether they're quiet, whether they're loud, whether they fight, whether they swear, whether they sleep, whatever it may be. There's a reason behind it, and your goal is to figure it out and not give up on them," said Corbel. You are listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls, The Courier, for Friday, October 22nd, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Waterloo, Barbara Martin Oscars Crawford, age 85, of Waterloo, was called to meet her Savior on Wednesday, October 20th, 2021, at her home. Friends may call from 5 o'clock until 7 o'clock p.m. on Thursday, October 28th, 2021, at the Adams Funeral Home at 502 Douglas Avenue in Ames, Iowa. Funeral service will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Friday, October 29th, 2021, at Calvary United Methodist Church, 1403 24th Street in Ames, Iowa. Burial will be in the Ames Municipal Cemetery. Face masks will be required. Barbara was born on August 17th, 1936 in Ames, the fourth of nine children born to Paul and Esther, maiden named Jackman, Martin. She was a graduate of Ames High School, class of 1954. In 1955, she married Frederick Harold Oscars in Des Moines, Iowa. Four children were born to this union. They made their first home in Des Moines, but later lived in Omaha, Nebraska, Perry, Iowa, and finally Waterloo, Iowa. Barbara was primarily a wife, mother, and homemaker. She inherited cooking skills from her mother and was an excellent cook. Barbara took classes at Drake University to study sociology and psychology. She worked at Harrison Treatment Center in Des Moines in alcohol reconciliation and at Iowa Children's Services as a parental force worker. She cared deeply about underprivileged children and families in need. Barbara would gladly share from her own limited resources with others who needed it more. In 1981, Barbara married Colin Crawford in Waterloo. They owned and operated a small neighborhood grocery store and laundromat until his death in 2013. Colin was a caring father figure for Barbara's children, who affectionately called him Pops. Barbara was a loving and supportive mother to her children. She was a sports fan and loved to watch football and basketball games with her sons. Life's journey was not always easy for Barbara. There were many challenges, but when she knew that God was always with her, she believed that all things work together for those who love the Lord, Romans 8:28. She enjoyed family reunions and vacation trips with her sisters. Some memorable trips were to Virginia and the Washington, D.C. area, the Black Hills, and a Caribbean cruise. Her beautiful grandchildren were the loves of her life. Barbara was preceded in death by her parents, infant brother Paul Victor, brothers Norman and Jerry, a sister Ruth Martin Reif, and her first husband. Left to cherish her memory are her children, Julie of Mattydale, New York, Frederick Jr., and Gregory of Waterloo, and David, spouse Rose, of Odenton, Maryland, sisters Pauline Martin, Paula L. Freeman, and Marie, spouse Joe Mancuso, all of Ames, and Mary Carr of West Des Moines, 9 grandchildren, 10 great-grandchildren, and many nephews, nieces, cousins, and friends. Funeral arrangements are under the direction of the Adams Funeral Home, and online condolences may be left for Barbara's family at www.adamssoderstrom.com. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to Cavalry United Methodist Church. Now let's continue reading the local news stories on this page. Federal immigration charges pending following meth arrest filed by Jeff Reinitz, Waterloo. A Waterloo man accused of being a methamphetamine supplier now faces federal charges. Agents with Immigration and Customs Enforcement on Monday filed a complaint charging 43-year-old Ruben Vasquez Velardes with illegal reentry following removal. The charges allege Vasquez, a citizen of Mexico, had been removed from the United States in February 2007, October 2009, and June 2014. Waterloo police arrested Vasquez on October 12th on a state charge of conspiracy to deliver methamphetamine, and his bond has been set at $150,000. At the time, authorities allege Vasquez and others supplied more than 5 pounds of meth in the Waterloo area between March and May 2021. State prosecutors have since asked the courts to dismiss the drug charges in favor of the federal charge. The next story was filed by the Associated Press. 2 Iowa State crew members died their first time on the water. Ames. 2 Iowa State University crew club members were participating in their first practice on the water when they drowned in March after their boat capsized in strong winds, according to newly released investigative findings. The pandemic had kept the club off the water for 18 months, and investigators concluded in information released Wednesday that team members' excitement for a chance to return likely clouded their judgment about safety, the Ames Tribune reports. Yaakov Ben David, 20, and Derek Nanny, 19, died in the capsizing on Little Wall Lake, about 20 miles north of University's campus in Ames. Three other members made it to shore, two of them with help from bystanders. The newly released information is included in the full reports of a pair of investigations. When summaries of those reports were released last month, Iowa State announced it was suspending the club for at least the remainder of the current school year to give the club time to implement necessary health and safety measures. The full report, which added several details, said that members had texted about the wind earlier that morning as they planned for the practice, with one saying it might top 15 miles per hour. Crew members were not supposed to row in wind greater than 14 miles per hour, according to the club's constitution. Members decided to head to the lake and check out the conditions. After deciding to go ahead, a pre-practice huddle about how to get into the boat and how to hold the handle went quickly because the air temperature was in the mid-30s and people were cold, investigators were told. While the water on the lake initially was calm, the winds picked up as students rowed to deeper areas farther from the shoreline and whitecaps formed, the investigators said. The team made one more practice run, even after someone raised concern about the wind. Survivors told investigators that when the team did try to turn the boat around, a combination of the waves and two members just learning how to set the boat made the maneuver difficult. Two waves hit the side of the boat while it was turning and flipped it. Officials pegged winds at 20 to 25 miles per hour when the boat capsized. None of the rowers was wearing life jackets, as is common among crew organizations, because oars can catch on them and interfere with their strokes. According to investigators, the weather conditions of the day of the accident could reasonably be described as not safe for rowing and would only be appropriate for advanced, experienced rowers in combination with the use of a properly equipped coach safety launch. Because Ben, David, and Nanny were new and inexperienced club members, the practice did not comply with the club's safety standard prohibiting rowers to row in conditions outside their ability levels, unquote. Next, Grassley speculates election may lead to infrastructure vote, story filed by James Lynch, and begins with a photograph of a smiling Senator Grassley seated and speaking behind a coffee cup. Cedar Rapids, election politics may do more to win approval of the $1 trillion infrastructure package he voted for than congressional arm-twisting has so far accomplished, said Senator Chuck Grassley. The Iowa Republican has heard Democrats may bring it up for a vote before the end of the month to help win the November 2nd Virginia gubernatorial race. Quote, what I've heard is that the race for governor is tightening up so much against the Democrats in Virginia that maybe this administration needs to show a win in order to keep Democrats voting in that particular state, Grassley told reporters Wednesday. Democrat Terry McAuliffe's lead has disappeared, according to a recent Monmouth University poll, which showed him tied with Republican Glenn Youngkin. Grassley was among 19 Republicans who joined Senate Democrats in passing the bipartisan infrastructure package in August. It includes $550 billion in new spending over 5 years to improve hard infrastructure. Since then, however, the package has been tied up in negotiations among Democrats. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi planned a floor vote in late September, but still is working to get a majority of her caucus to support the bill. Progressives want to tie in its approval to passage of a human infrastructure bill with large investment in education, health care, child care, and family leave, paid for with tax increases on wealthy people and corporations. Quote, it's pretty damn sure that, said Speaker Pelosi, shouldn't hold roads, bridges, locks, and dams hostage, Grassley said. He voted for the infrastructure package because of the support it received from Iowans. The topic comes up at nearly every one of his county meetings, he said. He also heard support from the Chambers of Commerce of the 10 or 12 largest Iowa cities and Iowa Farm Bureau, as well as commodity groups representing cattlemen, pork producers, and soybean and corn growers. Quote, just a lot of support, he said, probably because our bridges, you know, are most structurally deficient of any of the 50 states at about 23% of our bridges, unquote. This next story is filed by the Associated Press. Iowa trooper dies of injuries sustained in northeast Iowa crash, Des Moines. An Iowa State Patrol trooper died Wednesday, nearly a week after he was injured in a car crash in northeast Iowa that happened while he was rushing to assist another agency. Trooper Ted Benda, 37, was hurt October 14th in a single-vehicle crash while en route to help the Clayton County Sheriff's Office with a wanted suspect, according to the Department of Public Safety. He died of those injuries Wednesday. In a release announcing his death, the State Patrol and Department of Public Safety described officers and staff as being heartbroken. Governor Kim Reynolds released a statement expressing her sadness at Benda's death. Quote, tragic events like this are a somber reminder of how precious life is and of the unwavering, selfless sacrifice our brave men and women in law enforcement make every day, Reynolds said. Benda joined the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation in 2005 and transferred to the State Patrol in 2016. He most recently worked out of the office in Olwine. He is survived by his wife, Holly, and their four children. Here is the Metro Briefs column. Walk-in flu shots Saturday in Waterloo. Embark and Rise American Corps, AmeriCorps, will host a walk-in flu vaccine clinic in partnership with People's Clinic from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday at the First United Methodist Church, 614 Randolph Street. If you have insurance, please bring your card. For those without insurance, there will be financial assistance available. Interpreters will be available in Burmese, Karen, Karenni, and Vietnamese. Language hotlines are available for questions. Suggested call hours are between 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. Burmese, 515-783-3258. Karen, 515-512-1883. Karenni, 515-512-1884. Chin, 515-512-1887. And English, 515-512-1881. Civil War history author to speak, Waterloo. Kenneth LaFocht, a retired lecturer from the Department of History at the University of Northern Iowa, will be the guest speaker at the next Cedar Valley Historical Society meeting. The program will be at 7 p.m. Tuesday at the Grout Museum of History and Science, 503 South Street. Admission is $3 for adults and $2 for children. His presentation will begin with his book, Iowa and the Civil War, Volume 2, From Iuka to the Red River, and end with a preview of Volume 3, The Longest Year, 1865. His books will be available for purchase at the meeting for $40 a copy. Programs are open to the public. If interested in becoming a member, call 319-296-3019 for more information. Chili fundraiser planned in Cedar Falls. The North Cedar Neighborhood Association is working to acquire a Center Street landscaping project in their community. There will be a chili fundraiser from 3 to 7 p.m. Sunday at the Eagles Club, 2125 Lone Tree Road. A $10 ticket will get you an all-you-can-eat chili dinner with cornbread, lemonade, desserts, live music, fun activities with the kids, and an elementary artwork display. Mayoral forums set for next week. Waterloo. A Waterloo mayoral candidate forum will be from 7 to 8:30 p.m. Tuesday. The forum is sponsored by the Blackhawk Bremer County League of Women Voters and the Blackhawk County chapter of the NAACP. This forum is virtual, and the public may view it on www.facebook.com/ Black Hawk Bremer League, or the Waterloo City Cable Channel. The public will have an opportunity to submit questions. A Cedar Falls mayoral candidates forum will be from 7 to 8:30 p.m. Wednesday. The virtual forum may be viewed on www.facebook.com/Black Hawk Bremer League. The public will have an opportunity to submit questions via Facebook. For more information, please contact Gene Sealand at 310-493-2015. The Associated Press filed this next story. Strong economic growth continues in rural parts of 10 Midwest states, Omaha, Nebraska. Strong economic growth continues in rural parts of 10 Plains and Western states, according to a new monthly survey of bankers in the region. The overall economic index for the region improved in October to 66.1 from September's already strong 62.5 reading. Any score above 50 suggests a growing economy, while a score below 50 suggests a shrinking economy. Creighton University economist Ernie Goss, who oversees the survey, said the region is benefiting from solid grain prices, continued low interest rates, and growing agricultural exports. USDA figures show that agricultural exports are up more than 25% so far this year. Farmland prices in the area continue growing, even though the price index for cropland slipped in October to 81.5 from September's record high of 85.2. Demand for workers remains high, but businesses are having a hard time finding people to hire, Goss said. The hiring index increased in October to a very strong level of 71.4 from September's 67.9. But bankers were less optimistic about the economy. The confidence index dropped to 51.8 in October from September's much stronger 65.4 reading. Bankers from Colorado, Illinois, Iowa, Kansas, Minnesota, Missouri, Nebraska, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Wyoming were surveyed. Mary Clark Jelonek of the Associated Press filed this next story. House votes for contempt. Washington. The House voted Thursday to hold Steve Bannon, a longtime ally and aide to former President Donald Trump, in contempt of Congress for defying a subpoena from the committee investigating the violent January 6th Capitol insurrection. In a rare show of bipartisanship on the House floor, the committee's Democratic chairman, Mississippi Representative Benny Thompson, led the floor debate along with Republican Representative Liz Cheney of Wyoming, one of two Republicans on the panel. Still, the vote was 229 to 202, with most GOP lawmakers voting no, despite the potential consequences for Congress if witnesses are allowed to ignore its demands. The House vote sends the matter to the U.S. Attorney's Office in Washington, where it will now be up to prosecutors in that office to decide whether to present the case to a grand jury for possible criminal charges. Attorney General Merrick Garland said at a House hearing on Thursday that they plan to make a decision consistent with the principles of prosecution. The partisan split over Bannon's subpoena is emblematic of the raw tensions that still grip Congress 9 months after the Capitol attack. Lawmakers on the investigating committee say they will move swiftly and forcefully to punish anyone who won't cooperate with the probe. Quote, "We will not allow anyone to derail our work because our work is too important," Thompson said ahead of the vote. Republicans call it a witch hunt, say it is a waste of time, and argue that Congress should be focusing on more important matters. Indiana Representative Jim Banks, leading the GOP opposition on the floor, called the probe an illicit criminal investigation into American citizens and said Bannon is a Democrat Party boogeyman. Cheney and Illinois Representative Adam Kinzinger are the only two Republicans on the January 6th panel. Both have openly criticized Trump and his role in fomenting the insurrection even as other Republicans have mostly remained silent. The January 6th committee voted 9-0 Tuesday to recommend the contempt charges after Bannon missed a scheduled interview with the panel last week, citing a letter from Trump's lawyer that directed him not to answer questions. Even if the Justice Department does decide to prosecute, the case could take years to play out, potentially pushing past the 2022 election when Republicans could win control of the House and end the investigation. Now, in another story filed by the Associated Press, CDC signs off on booster expansion. Health officials give okay to J&J Moderna shots, mix-and-match policy. Washington. Millions more Americans can get a COVID-19 booster and choose a different company's vaccine for the next shot, federal health officials said on Thursday. Certain people who received Pfizer vaccination months ago already are eligible for a booster, and now the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says specific Moderna and Johnson & Johnson recipients qualify too. And in a bigger change, the agency is allowing the flexibility of mixing or matching that extra dose, regardless of which type people receive first. The Food and Drug Administration had already authorized such an expansion of the nation's booster campaign on Wednesday, and it was also endorsed Thursday by a CDC advisory panel. Starting 6 months past their last Pfizer vaccination, people are urged to get a booster if they're 65 or older, nursing home residents, or at least 50, and at increased risk of severe disease. Boosters also are allowed, but not urged, for adults of any age at increased risk of infection. The same booster qualifications apply to Moderna recipients. Moderna's booster will come at half the dose of the original two shots. For recipients of the J&J vaccine, a booster is recommended for everyone at least 2 months after their vaccination. Now we have time to read a couple letters to the editor. Good riddance. In answer to a question posed in a recent letter, let me respond. No, I do not miss Donald Trump. He is an immoral, unethical, unfaithful, unchristian, un-American blowhard, and a liar. He took raging credit for things, no matter how little he had to do with it, and sometimes when he had nothing to do with it. He is a failed businessman. You don't declare bankruptcy 6 times, walk away with the cash, and leave a lot of little people holding the bag. That is a successful opportunist, not a businessman. Now he is perpetuating a lie about the election he lost just for his own gain. No, I do not miss Donald Trump. And that was sent by Rick Johnson of Waverly. The next one is titled Shatner in Space. October 13th was a big day for Star Trek fans. Our beloved Captain James T. Kirk from Riverside, Iowa, William Shatner, blasted into space aboard a Blue Origins capsule. Upon landing, he emotionally commented on the beauty and fragility of our planet. That also can be said for its occupants. We have a responsibility to care for each other, including sacrificing a bit of our convenience and autonomy in battling COVID-19. In, quote, The Wrath of Khan, 1982, Spock says, "Logic clearly dictates that the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few." Captain Kirk answers, "Or the one." Can we agree to put our contentious politics, conspiracy theories, and my body, my choice beliefs aside for the greater good? The lives of many vulnerable members of our communities depend on it. This sent in by Linda Taylor of Waterloo. Next, good candidates. About the Cedar Falls School Board candidates. An embarrassment of riches. I don't know any of the candidates personally, but after reading the Courier about the League of Women Voters Forum and then watching online, I say, expand the board and let them all serve. Thanks to those who are volunteering to serve for the first time and those who have served and are volunteering to serve again. We citizens of Cedar Falls are lucky to have this slate to choose from, sent in by Judith Benson of Cedar Falls. Our future. Our joint communities of Waterloo and Cedar Falls have an important date, November 2nd. we will choose mayors and council members to lead us forward or who will reverse our city's accomplishments. I am concerned for both cities. I am a 40-year-old resident of Cedar Falls who raised a family and enjoyed a career and values what the committed city staff worked hard to accomplish. A thriving downtown, new construction for housing and schools, safer roads, trails for walking and biking, and more. Our city staff has demonstrated its ability to lead with a focus on the future. I am deeply concerned that the rancor and misinformation floating around both Cedar Falls and Waterloo threatens the vibrancy in both cities and their ability to move ahead. Focusing on the issue of fire safety delivery in Cedar Falls and what emblems should be on police uniforms in Waterloo will not help us meet the challenge of the future. Learn the facts, check out candidate positions through websites, attend debates and forums, and then acknowledge that voting for candidates willing to work together and focus on the future is vital, now more than ever. And then go vote for them. Sent in by Lori Young of Cedar Falls. And this is a story filed by James Q. Lynch of the Courier Des Moines Bureau. Democrats, not GOP, quick to embrace new election map. Iowa Democratic legislative leaders say they have committed their members to voting for a second version of a plan released Thursday that would set congressional and legislative election district boundaries for the next decade. Their Republican counterparts, who are in the majority in both legislative chambers, pledged to review the plan before the Iowa legislature meets next week in a special session in light of concerns that led them to reject the first proposal earlier this month. The plan unveiled by the nonpartisan Legislative Services Agency would reconfigure the state's four congressional districts, creating three potentially competitive districts and a solidly Republican Western Iowa district. Plan 2 also would create 56 Iowa House and Senate districts that would lump together two or more existing incumbents. And that does it for today's reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls The Courier for Friday, October 22nd. I'm your reader, Bob Young. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And thank you for listening to Your Iris, Iowa's first and only radio reading service.